running ads in Facebook in 2022, you might as well put an ad in a magazine. You know, like, it was comforting because everyone is struggling, but to hear at that level, through $200 million company, they kind of reiterate, okay, we're all struggling here. And they kind of coined the phrase, you know, there was a bull rush the past several years on Facebook. And now because of the iOS 14 changes, you know, it's over, right? The party is over.
We're on a mission. We're going to find and uncover the smartest, most successful entrepreneurs on the planet, explore their highs, their lows, and how they ultimately mastered the game. I'm Martin Cook, and I'm excited to welcome you to the Smarter Destiny podcast. I'm grateful for you and your time. Now let's level up together. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another Smarter Destiny podcast, where this time we're joined by Victor De La Cruz. Victor is the founder and CEO of ChristianPlanner.com. A former captain in the Air Force, he saw a niche and jumped into it with quite a lot of success, by the way. So it's a seven-figure company that helps Christians integrate God into their modern daily life. They hit number 92 on the Inc. 5000. They have 50,000 active users, which, if you're trying to visualize that, that's approximately Madison Square Garden being sold out twice over. Pretty cool. So he founded it in 2016. There's tons of charitable elements and donations and so on that they do behind the scenes without any need of recognition for that. And just generally, they are crushing the internet right now. And so we'd have been foolish not to get them on the show. So without further ado, let's welcome him to the stage. Victor, how's it going?
Doing great. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too. So whereabouts in the world are you, Victor?
So I'm based out of New York City. Originally from California, but my wife is a New York City girl, and we live here now.
So you swapped all that sun, sand, beach.
Yeah.
Flew the other side. Brilliant. She's a hell of a girl. She must be. Anyway, so the way we like to kick things off on this show, Victor, is we like to go back. We like to go back to a point in your past, which serves as the kicking off point for your entrepreneurship, when you were bit by that radioactive entrepreneurial spider, aka Spider-Man reference there for you. Is there a point in your past in mind that you could picture and tell in such detail that it feels like we're there as well? If so, go for it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've always had entrepreneurship in my veins. You know, kind of typical, I was a typical guy who was bad in school, right? And succeeded in entrepreneurship. I actually, you know, had a head injury, when I was a child, that, you know, causes, you know, kind of like impulsivity and, you know, just, you know, cognitive issues and stuff like that. But, it lends itself really well to entrepreneurship, right? Because I'm not afraid of just getting after going into the unknown and, you know, there's a lot of things that happen that you have to react impulsively in entrepreneurship, right? You just have to go. And so always had it in my veins, in part for the, you know, the TBI experience that I had as a child. And I just, my brain just uses different resources to solve problems versus, you know, I don't read any books. I've never read a book, actually. I try really hard, but I've never read a book cover to cover. And so there's just like this level of just creativity that lends itself well to starting a company. I spent 4 years in the Air Force. I had a very, very great career on paper. Like I, you know, had a lot of cool jobs, but, you know, and I had flashes of entrepreneurialism. That's why I had a good career on paper, but underneath it, I was really, really struggling because I'm not the corporate guy. I'm not, you know, I'm a military, I'm kind of like a contrarian, I would say. I don't like to just say I'm a contrarian, like that's kind of like, you know, like, oh, I'm a contrarian. But like, that's just the way I'm built. I'm built for entrepreneurship. And then when my opportunity came after I got in the military, you know, after failing at school and just struggling in the military, and I was in grad school and I was struggling there, right? And this idea came to start ChristianPlanner.com. And I saw the opportunity in the market. And, you know, I just went after it. You know, it was in 2016. And, you know, everything just kind of came into light, you know, and talk about that quick start, impulsive, like I just saw it, right? ChristianPlanner.com, the domain was available. You know, I looked, you know, on Facebook at the audience size, the addressable audience size to market to. It was massive. There wasn't anybody. There was a bunch of Christian planners in the market, but there wasn't like a brand, you know, and, you know, ChristianPlanner.com. How straightforward is that? You know, and so it just did really well.
So I love that. So I love the word impulsive there kicking in. It's like saw the opportunity, use my impulsive superpower to jump into the opportunity. So you had that sort of tendency to entrepreneurship in the early days. Can you hit us with some examples of some of the things you might have done in your younger years that was a little bit entrepreneurial and you kind of flexed that muscle and liked it?
Yeah, no, I think entrepreneurship is like capitalizing on opportunities, right? And so I didn't like start a lemonade stand when I was like a kid or anything like that. But I was always good at selling. I was always really good at selling. I was like a top salesman, like at every company that I worked with, you know, just really good at selling human-centered products or ideas or opportunities. And so, you know, like I was like, you know, when I was 17, I was working at, or 16, I was working at Macy's. I was always like the top credit card sale, you know, closing those credit cards, those Macy's cards. I was always like number one. And then Verizon, I was slinging cell phones for a little bit, you know, in college. And I was always the top sale. You know, I was like, you know, I was part-time a Verizon sales rep, you know, while going to school, making like $8,000 a month, you know, which is like crazy for a college student, because traditionally college kids are broke. I wasn't broke. I was killing it, you know? So, you know, I was even in high school, like senior year, I was crushing this multi-level marketing business, you know, like I was working under my dad's social, because I wasn't even old enough at the time you had to be 18, right? To sell, you know, we were selling like, you know, phone services, and like I recruited the entire town, like essentially, and I was like, and I was driving like, you know, the Cadillac CTSV, you know, like when I was like, you know, 17. So selling, you know, that commerce, right? It's all about making product and selling product. And so since I'm a creative type, I was able to create the right product, find the right product market fit, and then because I am a salesman and I know humans, so I'm good at selling human-centered things when it comes to like air conditioner, you know, like, or something, or not, that was a bad example. Like if I'm selling like something super complex or technical, that's not my area. At selling human-centered products, ideas, opportunities is what I've always been good at.
Nice. So let's drill into that. And by the way, I love that like a little bit of a rebellion streak came out there and a little bit of zigging when the world's zagging and so on. And it came out in there. And actually, it's a very common theme on this show that the most successful entrepreneurs have some form of structured selling in their past genuine salesman experience in their past, because it's so important. So you said like human-centered products, you're really good at selling those. Could you sort of distinguish what human-centered products mean, like what is and what isn't, and then give us some strong insight, shall we say, into what makes you a great salesman, what techniques you had or the subtle differences that made you so much better than the other salesmen you worked alongside?
Yeah. So I guess human-centered, I always kind of throw that term around, but like the Christian planner is very human-centered, because it's about, you know, taking this, we've created this framework for people to integrate God into their daily modern life, right? It's not an app. It's not a, you know, it's a physical dated paper planner that helps you, you know, develop good habits, you know, practice gratitude, reflect on the teachings at church. And you take that into your week while you're planning out your day. And you're just living this optimal integrated life, which for me, that's as human-centered as it gets, you know, like, so I, you know, I, and, you know, I like, as far as the sales side, right? Your question was, what makes a good salesman? Was that, correct?
Kind of what makes a good salesman, but really what, I guess, if I was to rephrase it, it's like, if you're selling human-centered products, what do you focus on when you're selling? Like, you can talk about anything to do it, right? Features, benefits, whatever. Like, where is your focus when you're selling these kind of things that makes you more convincing than others?
It's just, I think, like, you know, it's just EQ, right? You hear that term, especially with Gary Vaynerchuk. It's like, I have high EQ, right? like I'm just really good at just understanding people and just connecting. And I've always been, you know, very, very social, right? Extroverted. And so that's just understanding of people, right? I get confidence, or I don't know, just the confidence to connect. And then just, I'm always trying to seize opportunities, like not taking advantage of folks. I don't, you know, want to, that opportunistic, entrepreneurial, adventurous, paired with, like, you know, just humans and loving people and wanting to connect with them. There's just those two things just really make a good salesperson, I would say, you know, or entrepreneur or whatever. I don't want to dumb it down, but that's just kind of what it is.
Okay. So you've got 50,000 active users of the Christian Planner. What is it? What is the why behind the why? Why do your customers buy your planner? What is it that they actually want? What is it that the planner is actually giving and fulfilling for them?
Yeah. No, it's a planner. Again, our mission is to help Christians integrate God into their daily life. And the framework, you know, I created, right? I did, my wife designed the actual interior of the planner, and I told her, put this word here, put this, you know, line here, this space here. But what makes it so unique and why people love it is because there's a space for their weekly sermon notes, right? So Christians go to church on Sundays. And so they take this planner, right, to church, and it's, you know, they write down the sermon notes, and then they're able to kind of take it into the week. They don't forget it, right? Because they have it in their planner. So they're writing their appointments for Monday, appointments for Tuesday, but then they flip back, there's like the message, and they're just living this like holistic life. And so that's the biggest thing. It's like it's a pretty thick planner too. It's like, because of that feature, the weekly sermon notes, it adds like, it's a thick book, and it's hardcore. It's kind of like a gym for your spiritual life. If you're not using it, right, there's going to be blank pages, you know, and you're like, oh, I have to do this again. And it's, but you know, it's for someone who's very serious about their Christian spiritual practice.
Nice. Okay. So moving paces a little bit, we spoke a little bit off air. You're founded in 2016 and 2020, you know, and you found that product market fit, and you leveraged Facebook ads, and 2016 was a wonderful time for Facebook ads. It really was. There wasn't a lot of competition. The CPMs were low anyway. E-commerce has moved on since then. You're still a successful company. What has changed about the customer acquisition side for you since 2016? Like how does 2022, 6 years later, compare to 2016? What are you doing now to acquire your customers?
You know, that's a really good question. I'm currently in New York City for a conference, and it's called Grow, and like the biggest e-commerce brands were there, like Athletic Greens was there on stage, Brooklinen. And, you know, everyone is struggling from all of the iOS, you know, 14 updates. But, you know, the Athletic Greens crew, they were essentially like, you know, Facebook, running ads on Facebook in 2022, you might as well put an ad in a magazine, you know, like, so it was very, very, it was comforting because everyone is struggling, but to hear at that level, you know, $100-$200 million company, right? Like, they kind of reiterate, okay, we're all struggling here. And they coined the phrase, you know, there was a bull rush the past several years on Facebook. And now because of the iOS 14 changes, you know, it's over, right? The party is over. So there's a lot of emerging technologies and cool startups that, you know, everyone knows about, you know, collecting first party data and, you know, and AI, and, you know, there's just like a lot of stuff. So right now, acquisition for us, we were number 92 on the Inc. 5000 because we rapidly grew. We're taking a more conservative approach to growth over the next 3, 6, 9, 12 months, right? And we have this warm audience base of, we've acquired 450,000 customers since 2016. You know, we have that hardcore user base of, you know, 50,000 folks off of one product, one channel, one marketplace, right? So the approach now is to expand product lines, to increase frequency, to get people coming back more. Something we haven't had, it's a huge opportunity. It's just Christian Planner. So we're going to start expanding, you know, subscription boxes and more guided journals, and we're going to deliver more content, you know, so that the brand experience is what another thing we're focusing on. And, you know, at this point, you know, I have a really great operator who's you know, taking over the reins of, you know, continue to build out, you know, all of our initiatives and our team. And so my focus is shifting to, okay, you know, we had a great run with this company. You know, we're looking for, you know, whether it's a strategic partner, investor, you know, great. We're going to continue to run it as a legacy business. But my focus now is diversifying outside of that core business. And hopefully, you know, we're looking to raise money for a mobile application. We have about 70,000 folks on our Facebook group, you know, and they're beholden to Facebook's capabilities. We think that we can create a platform that will provide more engagement to our customer. And I you know, we believe that we can expand beyond our, you know, expand the audience beyond our demographic, beyond our audience. And so that's kind of like the next mountain I'm looking to climb.
I think that's really cool. And you're taking a bit of time here to sort of think about that plan and attack it deliberately, should we say. So you've got this massive core audience. There's an opportunity to resell to them, to keep selling to them other things, perhaps planner covers, perhaps pocket-sized planners, perhaps, you know, whatever it is, you know, I guess you can branch out as you like, but then at the same time, also bringing them into a space where you can sort of nurture the community a little bit better than Facebook. You know, EdgeRank, their last apocalypse, right, saw the end of any kind of real engagement on Facebook pages and things like that. So that's a really cool way of doing that. So, what would you say to someone launching a business? So you've got this awesome asset. You've got this great historical brand. So you've got these customers that will reorder each year. Hopefully, they just need a few nudges. You've got kind of repeat sales on tap, which is an amazing asset for any e-commerce brand. What about the brands starting now? There's new brands launching every single day. They're launching into this space. What would you recommend they look at, and would you recommend they focus their attention in terms of acquiring cold customers?
Yeah, I mean, it's right now it's an omni-channel approach. You just have to, especially in today's market, you have to, you know, to just figure out who your customer is, right? And just attack, you know, all the channels, right? Attack all the marketplaces, whether it be Etsy, Amazon, Fair, shop, you know, your core, you know, e-commerce website, Shopify store. Just attack in every angle. Like it's really hard. It's not easy to start a brand today. But there's a lot of emerging technologies, and there's a lot of, you know, emerging channels. Like while the OGs are sad that the Facebook party is over, there's going to be more opportunities. So just attack is what I would say.
Beautiful. I love that. And what I would add to that as well, I mean, certainly with Nubru, Facebook is far from dead for us, but what we've taken a bit like the representative of Athletic Greens said, where it's a bit like advertising in a magazine. Yeah, what Facebook's kind of doing at the moment is, because that targeting and the pixel optimization and stuff is less good, it means that the people reaching your stuff are less hot for your stuff. And so what we've done is we've just gone, okay, so if it was truly cold people coming in, you know, haven't really been warmed up from the ad and the targeting's all over the place, how can we create sales mechanisms to warm them up and at our own disposal, so that, that you could just walk complete strangers in and potentially sell the benefits of our product to them without them knowing anything beforehand? And so I think there's an opportunity for the really great sellers to, you know, sharpen their axe, if you like, and jump in and really flex their sales muscles, and they will stand out better, the people that can do that. So I'd say that. And things like advertorials, for example, are a great way to do that, to warm it up, whether it's your own advertorial or whether you've got a piece of paid PR that you can then run traffic to, and then that PR then brings brand awareness. And yeah, they're gonna, in 2022, they're gonna be Googling you, they're gonna be looking up, they're gonna, so your online reputation needs to be solid, right? So you need to make sure that your Trustpilot game's strong, your Google review and Amazon, all the rest of the places that people are reviewing you, make sure that that's strong. But selling is becoming more and more important. And there you go, you're
welcome. Yeah, that's great advice.
All right. So at this point in the show, ChristianPlanner.com, folks, is where to go check out Victor's stuff and join the 50,000 active users doing the same thing. But at this point in the show, we like to mix it up. We go into the rapid fire question round. I ask the questions quickly. You choose the speed in which you respond, but typically it's quite swift. Are you up for that?
Let's do it.
Are you two thumbs up for that?
Five fingers.
Ten fingers, two thumbs. He is up for that. All right. Question one, Victor. If you ever had to start again, how would you make your money?
So if I were to start again tomorrow, how would I make my money? I want to get into tech, and I want to play, you know, we bootstrapped our way. You know, I really want to, and I'm doing it, right? I'm starting again, and we're fundraising, and we're going into tech, something that's exciting for me, right? So I'm doing it right now. I'm going to fundraise for an app.
Nice. There you go. So if you had to start again, you'd do the thing that is the next step of your current thing in many ways. It's cool. What's the most common or biggest mistake leaders make?
I mean, I think that thinking that, and this is at the very beginning, right? You know, it's hot, exciting, you're getting traction, thinking that you can do everything, you know, was my big mistake. And I see that, oh, I can run logistics and death, and then I do it all myself. So I would say that. And now I don't even touch the things I'm not good at, you know, and I let the experts and take care of the stuff, you know. So that's my answer.
So sort of learning to delegate better and to relinquish control a bit more.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's the solution right there.
So to you, who is a great leader, whether they're alive or dead, and why?
I love Jim Harbaugh. I don't know if you know him out there in the UK, but he's a football coach. He's just like a really good, he's currently at Michigan, head coach at Michigan, you know, did really well there. It's doing really well there. He was a 49ers football coach from my favorite NFL team. And he took them to the Super Bowl. I mean, you excelled at college football. I love him because he has this saying, like, attack each day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind. Mm-hmm. And you know, there are stories about him, you know, just like he would fall asleep in the driveway at his car, and he would wake up and think it's time to go to work, but it's like 11 at night. You know, like that is boss, you know, like I love, obviously you have to find balance, right? It's not healthy to do that all the time, but when you're running a startup, right, that you have to have that enthusiasm. And I love that word enthusiasm because the Greek root is entheos, which means possessed by a god or in God. So like enthusiasm, like for me, that is the word, right? That, you know, and then that attack each day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind, like a godlike energy, right? That's what you need, right? And so I even called our new company Entheos Labs, because it's, you know, we follow the energy. So
that's a great name. How do you hire top talent?
You know, we're a lean team. So we don't, you know, I don't hit, you know, HR, you know, platforms, or we don't have an internal HR function. Like I like to do it organically, you know, just people that I know who introduced me to folks. And I love seeing, you know, opportunity in folks. Like I love like building people up and getting them to where they want to be. I think that that is a strength and a weakness. There's been a lot of folks who've taken advantage of that, but I like to do it organically, you know, through relationships, because I'm kind of like a relationship guy. So we don't like, you know, hit Indeed or anything like that.
Nice. What is one of your proudest moments?
Aside from having our kids, on the personal side, on the professional side, it's the number 92 on the Inc. 5000. That was a pretty exciting day because we had no idea where we were going to fall, you know, and you hear people flexing that achievement and to kind of break into the top 100. That was super, super exciting.
So what's the process for putting yourself on Inc.'s radar, and what year was it that you got this award?
So we got it back in 2020. It's pay to play, you know, anyone can apply. It's not like they go out and find you or they have your financials, you know, but because it's such a, reputable company, like a lot of folks and a lot of heart, you know, heavy hitters apply, like Facebook, I believe applied like back in the day. So there is a large pool of folks, of heavy hitters that are on that list. So you just apply, and they, based on the applicants, they'll just rank you based on revenue, and they verify that revenue. So yeah.
Nice. And so is it your revenue for that year, or is it revenue from growth and how many years you've perception and how long you've been around?
Good question. So it's over a 3-year period. So in 2020, it was from 2016 through 2019. And we didn't apply the next year because I just forgot. I was like, oh, shit. But you know, that's fine. You know, yeah.
Beautiful. What's one interesting fact about you that not many people would know?
I mean, like if you think, you know, business guy and military guy, I'm like totally, totally not typical. Like I'm not like a CEO type, I'm more on the creative side. You know, after the military, I went to jazz. Yeah, I studied jazz piano at NYU, and I didn't finish the degree because, you know, the startup kind of came at that time, and I just like, screw this. I went to culinary school, started under a 3-star Michelin chef, and that, you know, I did, you know, I didn't know. I went to culinary school to kind of take my mind off of the business for a little bit, and I had no idea if I was going to be a good cook or not, but I was like one of the best, like in the class under this 3-star Michelin chef. It wasn't just like kids. There were some kids out of high school, but they were like, you know, line cooks from like Le Bernardin, like 3-star Michelin restaurants. It was New York City. And so, you know, it was really cool because, you know, it's very entrepreneurial, right? You have these ingredients, right? And then you compose a dish, right? And it's all about feel, right? And for some reason, like it felt like launching Christian Planner every time I go to like make a dish, right? Like just everything that was involved from the cooking and the fire and making sure and like, yeah, it's crazy, right? It's a very entrepreneurial like endeavor, the kitchen, and folks who were way more organized than me and didn't have the talent, right? But they made the same recipe as I did. And, you know, like they couldn't make as good of a tasting dish as I, and it was just an amazing experience for me. So, that's what people don't typically know is that creative stuff.
I like that. So what daily routines do you have, whether morning or evening, that have helped make you successful?
You know, to be quite honest, like I'm not very hardcore on having this like tried and true routine. They come in seasons, you know, for me. I know that, you know, nowadays we kind of, you know, we wake up with the kids and it's very, you know, we stay up late. Everyone stays up late. You know, it's the kids have kind of thrown a wrench. I have a 1-year-old and a 3-year-old. But there was a period in Christian Planner very early on where I was working like, you know, almost 24 hours a day, I felt like, and that routine, the routine that I had there, I still use some form of it, but it was basically my top five, right? What are the top 3 to 5 things for the week? What are the top 3 to 5 things for the day? And that is what I'm accomplishing, right? And, you know, I truly believe that that is the most productive way to really move the ball forward in your business, in your life. What are the top 5 things for the week? And what are top 5 things for, and then even Stephen Covey, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, he says that like the bread and butter of your planning, right, should be in the week, like the weekly planning, right? You have your personal vision and your goals, right, for the year, right? But then the bread and butter of like efficient execution is, okay, your weekly planning. So I kind of abide by that.
Nice. Great answer. So I know you said you've never read a book from cover to cover, but you must learn from somewhere. And assuming you do, what book, or replace with your thing, or books, changed your mindset or life?
Great question. I mean, I do listen to audiobooks, right? Reading and decoding words is hard for me because of the head injury. But I love a lot of like psychology books, like Carl Jung and Jordan Peterson. I'm sure a lot of your audience, you know, those types of folks resonate with them. So I love a lot of Carl Jung, the depth psychology, just going into the depth of the psyche and really, you know, unpacking like who you are. It's so fascinating to me because it provides a level of awareness so that you can go out and orient yourself and the world and contend with and win, you know.
What do any specific books by those authors come to mind?
For Jordan Peterson, his 12 Rules for Life was amazing. Maps of Meaning as well. Carl Jung, Man and His Symbols is a great book that I'm listening to. He talks about basically dreams and a dream interpretation because it's essentially a reality, your dreams, right? If you can remember them, they're a reality in and of itself and they're saying something. So he was known for doing that kind of clinical work with his clients. He'd ask his clients to record their dreams and then they'd come in and he would decode them. And what he started to notice is that like there was like there were reoccurring symbols throughout all of his patients. And that is traced back to Sumerian Greek mythology, right? And then these symbols represent, a lot of them represent archetypes, he calls them, right? And archetypes are like, you know, like the wise king or the joker, and we all kind of interplay with these, like, you know, the wise king, like Simba or Mufasa, the king of Pride Rock, who instills order throughout the land. And then there's the Shadowland, and then there's Scar, who's the evil uncle, right? And then there's even Rafiki, who's like the priest and represents wisdom throughout all the ages. And then Mufasa is supposed to represent, you know, wisdom of the current time. He's the current king, right? I'm kind of trailing off here, but that's the kind of stuff that I love because, you know, it's important. I mean, we're all connected. I don't want to just throw that term out there, but Jung identified that there are reoccurring archetypes that go back to, you know, earliest of man, like when they were drawing, you know, symbols and images in caves. And the big, one of the things he says is know your myth because it could end in a tragedy, you know? And so my myth is Icarus, right? Like Icarus loves to fly, but his wings are made of wax. Mm-hmm. And he's, you know, you can't fly too close to the sun because your wings will melt and you'll fall. And so that's my thing. I need people around me. And my partner, my personal partner, she really grounds me. My COO, he grounds me and keeps me, they all keep me tethered so I don't, you know, don't fall.
Too close to the sun. So this is a new question for the show, but it's an important one. So with an impending recession potentially upon us, right, and certainly the changes in the economy, what advice do you have or what changes are you making in your business to make your brand and your things recession proof, and what do you advise others do?
Just a very, you know, conservative approach to growth and a plan and managing cash flow, keeping your cash and hitting your warm audience and just leveling up on the brand experience from my vantage point owning our e-commerce business, that's my take. And I'm honestly glad, you know, for I'm going out and raising money in this kind of recession environment, because, you know, we're going to get a true partner who really believes in us, and we're going to get, you know, probably a lower valuation, but when we're in a bull run again, you know, we're going to be positioned, you know, for just like, you know, a great, great, great valuation. So I'm not worried about the recession.
Nice. What unusual or underrated food or drink should more people try out?
I'm into those layered superfood mushrooms. I know that's not necessarily a food or drink, but like his lion's mane mushrooms, that stuff is like, it's crazy. Just put in your coffee and then like, you feel like you're just like operating on like, you know, level 20,000.
You love lion's mane, particularly for creativity, actually. Lion's mane, I find is an awesome, awesome mushroom there. And then final question, Victor, what makes you happiest?
I try to stay away from happy. I feel like happy is like a fleeting thing, right? That's not, I just try to stay away from that word. I think content is the way, you know, like what I'm trying to achieve. And so in order for me to feel content, we have to achieve our financial objectives, right? You know, we've had some great financial success with the current company, but you know, it would be, you know, $50 million, you know, like nest egg, you know, that's kind of, or in that range, that's going to allow us to really, you know, just be content after that. Not we have to worry about money, creating generational wealth. We can, you know, just live our lives after we do that.
I think that's a fantastic answer, making it less about happiness and more about contentment and what could get you to contentment. I love that. What a great answer to top off a great episode today. We're nearly at the end. I just want to say, do you have any asks or requests of the audience listening today?
No. I mean, if anyone wants to reach out, you know, I think it's the Victor Vinny. Yeah, my friends call me Vinny. You can on Instagram, the Victor Vinny. You can add me, or if you want to shoot me an email, victor@christianplanner.com. I know a lot of this stuff I talked about, like Jordan Peterson and mythology. I mean, it's like there's a group of dudes who love that stuff. So if that's you, or woman as well, just hit me up, and I'm more than happy to connect.
Beautiful. Well, Victor, thank you so much for being on the show. Thank you very, very much for sharing so openly, telling us about your business, how you're positioning yourself for the future, how you deploy psychology, how you make human selling human-centered products. It's been a fascinating show. I'm sure the audience would agree. So thank you so much for taking the time to share with us on the Smarter Destiny podcast.
Thank you so much.
Hey there, you incredibly good-looking human. Thanks so much for listening. If you had a good time today and would like more good times in the future, please hit that subscribe button and leave a heartwarming review. I read them all, and it will go a long way to help others out there benefit from all the teachings of this show. And if you want to get in touch or otherwise learn more about me, head to martincook.co.uk or smarterdestiny.com. I really appreciate you. You're an incredible human. Until next time, keep crushing.